Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Just when you think the Eagles can't let you down even more, they do. We are here on the seventh episode of the Odds and End Zones podcast on the Great Bleeding Green Nation Radio Network. I'm your host, Seamus Clancy, and with me, Joe, my man, what's going on?
What's up, bro?
What'd you do for the game on Sunday?
We kept it very casual. We hung out at home, ordered some pizza for the kids, and then we got some wings and stuff. So four o'clock game. I know we talked about this in the last pod, but 4 o'clock games are okay with me. Because I get to get my Sunday errands out the way, and then I can sit down good and get dialed in. And you know what? That first drive, I was like, we're gonna be cooking. It's funny. I know we all know people who went out there. My uncle went out for his birthday.
Yeah, we were talking last week.
Yeah, so he texted us and was saying that the vibes were incredible. Like leading up to the game, walking up to a ton of Eagles fans, right? I feel like this is our broken record. The vibes are always incredible, but he was like a ton of Eagles fans. That first drive, the place was going nuts. And then obviously we know what happened after that. But yeah, it was not a Sunday well spent, but not well spent.
I feel so bad for those Eagles fans because more so than any other road trip, know that cost several thousands of dollars all around, not even talking gambling stuff like we do on Odds and End Zones. This isn't a little, NJ Transit, Amtrak ride up to the Meadowlands and back same day deal. Yeah. You're staying at the Bellagio there.
Right.
You got those bachelor party seats in there, like you're in the Arizona Diamondback Stadium or whatever.
Yep.
And they go and lay like an absolute stinker. Not even a game where – I think this is what we've been talking about consistently is that they're not just losing games, which you could kind of be expected for a team that I thought they could have made a playoff push, and some people definitely differ on that before the season. But there are no things that – like I'm not a moral victory guy, but there aren't even things that you could have a moral victory for from all their losses this season. If anything, their one win against Carolina is like a moral loss because they played terrible the entire game. And they had a fluke special teams play. That's not a sustainable way to play football. Like, hey, what's your bread and butter? We get like a block punt once per year that puts our team in good field position for our quarterback to rush for a touchdown. And I had my dad came over. My dad has like a crazy work schedule this year. So that was only the second game I got to watch with him all season.
Oh, yeah.
Watch the home opener. And, I've always talked about my dad on podcasts and writing, season ticket. He hasn't been able to go to an Eagles game. Won't be able to go to one until the Saints game all season.
And by that point, honestly, the season might be over for both teams.
Might be tailgating and not going even into the game at that point.
I was going to say,
That's happened. The last time I did that was – I don't know who they played. It was like week 15, 16 of the 2012 season. I had a couple of my college friends. Like I drove my car down, left it. My dad like grabbed it and we didn't go in. When we got into the stadium and we're getting into the seats, they blew the whistle for the 2 minute warning. And you're like 18 or whatever, so it's different. But it was definitely out of there before the last 2 minute warning.
Yeah,
so for sure. I did a couple same game parlays, and those are such an addicting thing, and that's maybe a bad thing, and definitely gamble responsibly. Responsible, don't be betting money that you can't afford to lose. At the end of the day, right. I lost this $15 bet, this $30, and it could be different on pace when you're in. If you can afford to do a $100 bet because you make a lot of money and lose it, in your case saying I'm losing $100 today, that's fine. Go do it. Go crazy.
Yeah, good for you, dude.
Yeah. But what an ingenious invention those same game parlay were. Because everyone's – like you say, oh, my God, this guy hit for 8K or 10K or whatever. Everyone is doing a bunch of those on every game and all those little costs add up.
And then you see there was a guy – so a dude hit for – I think it was like 180 grand. And you looked at the – I can't imagine. Like, because you also have to put down a substantial amount of cash on it, right?
To get there, yeah.
You got to be willing to lose. Let's say it was like a $6,000 bet. You got to be willing to lose $6,000. Like, should Pat Mahomes?
Maybe you can. Maybe some guy can lose, or a girl, or whoever can lose.
So, I've always said that I've always thought that the people who bet those amounts of money, they are way more well off than I am. So like losing $6,000 to somebody like that is probably a drop in the bucket because they probably got another couple of grand lined up ready to roll. So like, if you can stomach that, I'm sure it's not the first time you wasted that amount of money on something.
Yeah. If there's anything you're going to bet this weekend, I don't think I'll bet on the Eagles the rest of the season. I'm sure this will change at some point. Like, maybe I'm going to the game with my dad and be like, you know what? Like, this could be fun. The team stinks, but maybe they just pull one out today. You know, maybe Devontae Smith, I put him to score the first touchdown or something like that. That's like, what could the line be that you would bet on the Eagles? Like, they're playing a winless Detroit team. That team seems like they actually like their head coach and they seem amped up. They have a way different energy. The Eagles are the team that feels like they're 0-7.
Yeah.
And the Lions feel like they're a 2-5 team that's kind of fought back a bunch. And right now the Eagles are -3.5. There's no line in all of sports betting that I think you should do more than a home team +3.5. Home dogs always a nice little thing to look at.
Always,
you're getting +3.5. That's like a famous shirt that people wear in like Vegas and Atlantic City and like gambling circles. Like one of my closest friends growing up, he's like legit works for sports books, has for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But he has a shirt that says +3.5 on it.
So I agree, and I think that I'm looking at this, and this is my message, my caution to all of our listeners and our fellow bettors. This is a Lions team that has been on the precipice all year.
They gave the Rams a scare.
Right. They gave the Rams a scare, and they took the Vikings literally down to the wire. They play tough, and they play very, very fast. And you hit them that right on the head. They're a team that looks like they at least enjoy their head coach, and they definitely play hard for them. Like, they may not be – they're certainly not the most talented, but the guys that they have are – they play really hard to the end of the whistle. So I think that, we could be looking at a tight game going into the fourth quarter. I would be highly shocked if there's a blowout either way. I think that this is going to – one, this is not going to be the prettiest brand of football for anybody. I will caution folks with that. And two, I think that when you're 0-7, you're desperate, right? So I think they're going to throw the entire kitchen sink at the Eagles. Ironically, though, speaking of bets, our guy for sure in Prep Brotherhood.
Their other way to talk about him,
right? Their very best player doesn't really see. They don't feature him until the fourth quarter. It's the oddest thing I've ever seen in football. I mean, seriously,
if they use him the way that the Eagles run defense, I don't know the numbers. I don't know what they're in rush DVOA or rush yards per game. But based on just the eye test and what you saw against Tampa Bay, what you saw against Detroit, when you see against guys, maybe they're not the greatest running teams ever. Dallas is obviously, but you have these talented backs. They're able to destroy this Eagles defense because Fletcher Cox just isn't Fletcher Cox anymore. Brandon Graham's gone. As good as he is and as iconic as he is as a pass rusher, he's probably actually better as a run defender. And again, that's not a slight to his pass rush at all.
You can tell they miss him. Yeah.
Yes. And linebacking core, and I think I might do a pod on this later in the week in terms of the Eagles' bad positional valuing and how things have kind of been a horse show theory where you devalue something so far that you're like up your own butt and don't, and like you need to have like, oh, the running doesn't matter. Like, actually, you need to have like a good running back. And right. The Eagles need to know that. Like, linebackers don't matter. Like, obviously, you want to pay like a safety or a defensive end or an offensive line more money than linebacker. But you also need players on your team that can tackle and stick tight ends and slot receivers. And they don't have any of that. So I don't know. The Lions are now, because it's still early. For people who are listening to this, we're recording late Tuesday night after the Sixers just got demolished on national TV by the Knicks.
Yeah, by the Knicks.
And you know they're going nuts outside MSG right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm jealous.
I'm so jealous. I honestly wish I was there. I don't even care. As a basketball fan, I'm sure it's electric.
Have you ever seen a game there?
I've seen a game there. I've seen a Big East tournament game there. I've never seen a Knicks game there, though. I was lucky enough in college to have a roommate who was just as crazed about basketball as I was. So we went up for the Big East tournament game. And the second time I was there, took a tour for my birthday. But, it is as palatial as they make it out to be. It's a sight to behold for sure. And one of the super, super cool things about it is the train. You take the train up, you literally
get that ball.
It's perfect, honestly.
It feels like a movie when you're coming out of Penn Station and you see that there. I've been there once. I talked about this a lot in the past. In my junior year of college, I was an intern for the Philadelphia Daily News, for the actual newspaper. And just because of how short-staffed they were, I was only getting paid part-time because I was a student and going to school full-time and doing this. And, you know, writing for Liberty Ballers and stuff like that. But because they're so short-staffed, I was kind of working as a full-time employee at the same time. And just the way college basketball season developed, I ended up becoming essentially their Temple beat writer. Temple made the NIT championship. Not even the tournament. It's the NIT. And it was at Madison Square Garden. They were playing Miami. They lost the game. But I got to sit on, like, press row. Press row isn't like the Sixers where it's all back. You're sitting like baseline.
It's like right there,
right there, like on the floor of Madison Square Garden. I don't care. That's a Temple Miami NIT game, the loser bracket.
That's awesome.
It was the most incredible experience.
That's terrific. And
look, I've interviewed some of my favorite Eagles players of all time, and I still think maybe just sitting there and soaking it up at 20 years old was mind blowing. And I'm sitting there next to like Mark Narducci and Mike Kern, and like these Philly sports writing legends too. It was awesome.
Shout out to Mike Kern. You got his
thanks. I gotta go to that. I never had their turkey. I don't know. I'm not gonna call it the what a convenience store chain calls theirs because I don't.
I don't want to give them any publicity. Yeah.
But their Thanksgiving like sandwich with turkey and stuffing and cranberry sauce looks awesome.
It's awesome.
Definitely got to pick one up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, highly suggest. It's really, really good. I've only had it once since they've been debuting it, but it's good. It's decadent too. Like if you have one, make sure you don't have anywhere else to go because you're gonna be planning on the couch afterwards.
Yeah, don't wear a nice shirt either.
Yeah, don't wear a nice shirt. Seriously.
I'm wearing like my pajama joggers right now. I had a slight cold, not COVID. I've gotten a couple of COVID tests and I'm fine. But I had like the knit hat on inside. You can watch this on YouTube. Subscribe to the BGN YouTube channel. The link will be in the podcast feed. But I was like bundled up today because I went for – it was like the most Philly thing ever. I wasn't feeling well the last couple of days. And I went to go pick up some food, like some groceries. And I went outside and like I'm from Philly. So I wear like a Flyers windbreaker and shorts. And it was really like 53 degrees out. And I was like, oh, I thought I would – I'm just a big guy. I would assume that I would have sweated so much. When I got home, I was like, I probably should have sweat out this cold instead and got all bundled up. And I'm at home. I'm texting Ashley. I'm feeling sick, everything like that. But DeAndre Swift, how's she feeling?
How's Ash feeling?
Good. On the couch. He's getting back into Pokemon Go.
Oh yeah, we'll leave it alone. That's it. That's it. We lost.
It's good. I don't necessarily want to say what the building is because I don't even know what the real name would be. But the apartment building we live in is some kind of land hotspot.
Like a hotspot. Yeah.
I don't know the terminology.
Yeah.
So it's apparently if you're over here at some point. the kids are into Pokemon Go. Bring them through. But talking about another guy from Philly, if you want to do a Philly bet this weekend, don't bet on the Eagles. I think DeAndre Swift would be the guy, right? You probably have a little bit more insight into them because I know you follow him super intently, way more than me. And he had some nice plays. He had a great catch and run. He's way better as a receiver in the pros than I expected him to be. I think that was a thing where in college where he maybe wasn't asked to do that a lot. And also a thing where we talk about Georgia running backs in the past a lot is they're so fresh. They have so many guys rotating in and out. So, you know, these guys are uber talented, but you don't know exactly like what their specific concrete skills are. And he's amazed me as that. He had that great run last week, but I don't know if you could take alternate running rushing yards line or whatever it might be. $1.50, but like I think back to that 2015, the Eagles lost to a bad Tampa Bay Buccaneers team at home. Doug Martin, like 1 or 2 years past peak muscle hamster era, rushed for 235 yards, and the Eagles lost 45-17, I believe. No, I don't think it'll be a 45-17 loss, but I could see the Lions winning and it not being like necessarily a super close game.
Yeah,
and Swift goes for like $1.60.
It just
like absolutely destroys Alex Singleton like in the red zone or like on a quick out and up where maybe he doesn't have 160 rushing yards, but maybe yards from scrimmage too, because like we're saying, he is really talented as a pass rusher, as a pass catcher. And we're talking about positional value and the Eagles have absolutely nothing at linebacker.
And that's where really he's been making his money. I mean, like you said, he hasn't at Georgia. He wasn't really asked to do it that much because, you know, he was also for his first 2 years of his career, he was splitting time with two other NFLs, right? So with Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb, imagine that running back room.
Remember that account that was popping off for a bit? It was like at College Athletes or College Athletics. They would post like all these, like their issue was they posted too frequently.
Yeah.
Initially, and then they just ran out of material.
I was going to say,
they're just a self-retweet account.
There was it was a college basketball one like that too. And they ran out of content. Like their issue is that, and it's a shame too because these guys start these accounts and it's actually good stuff, but they forget, like they never come up with an algorithm. So if you tweet all your stuff, all your good stuff in a month, you just become a retweet account. So
you wait for the Georgia Nick Chubb game post
when
the Browns are playing on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. Right. Or Georgia's playing Bama in the SEC Challenge. Not an elite poster, like either of us or Jeff McDevitt out there.
You got best, right. So I feel like another it's funny, another thing I was thinking about earlier is the Lions try to do this like weird 1-2 punch where like they don't really it's the reverse. So right, they don't really ask them to take it from scrimmage a ton. Like they'll split him out and if he's in there, he's most likely gonna run a screen or like they're gonna do a nice pitch or toss. But like Jamal Williams is their bell pile, right? So like he's another sneaky, like if you wanna do like the alternate yards for like 50 or something.
Pick him up in fantasy.
I was gonna say, I literally would pick him up in fantasy because if they get into the red zone, unfortunately, it's usually not Swift who gets it. It's Jamal Williams because he's the heavy hitter. Their wide receivers are, TJ Hockenson, I think that's how you say his last name. Their tight end is like Jared.
He's kind of like what we thought Goddard should have been. Like, yes. I'm not saying Goddard is like bad. I've always been a fan, and I think he's still like a top 10 tight end.
Yeah.
Closer to the top 6-7 just pure on talent. But I know he's kind of getting the targets because of who he's playing with, and Goddard didn't get as much because of who he was playing with, Ertz and other factors on the Eagles. But you know, kind of had that breakout year that I really wanted Goddard to have, and you know, we're getting there. Like it's finally the Dallas Goddard's breakout year. I don't really want to get too into that, but Hawk's good. He's good.
What do you think Goddard's leash is? Like, do you think they're going to go give him another full season? Or, like, do you think – I'll tell you what I think, but I want to hear what you think first.
I don't – so before the season, like, not – I'm not talking, like, June, July. I'm talking September, like, early in the week. Ertz came out and said he, like, reconciled with the organization and things seemed good. And it was just, you know, a total 180 from 365 days prior when he had that fight with Howard. And Goddard made a comment to the media. I don't know if you remember. It was like, things stalled out. I'm like, wait, are they actually going to keep Ertz over? And I was like, he's probably going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
And Goddard's hurt pretty often. And, you know, I wouldn't say he's hurt often. He plays an injury-prone style.
Yeah.
He's very physical, and that's what makes him awesome. Like, when he's doing well, you're seeing him crush defenders. But, you know, that's one of those things where you're talking about, like, a quarterback who takes a lot of hits. He's taking a lot of hits. And Zach Ertz, who has had some injury issues, he did in 2020, but maybe someone you thought could age a little bit better because getting less based on brute strength than Goddard is. So I'm thinking yes now, but I don't want to pay him, you know, I don't think he's not going to get Kelce money or Kittle money or anything like that, or what Mark Andrews got even.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get like above market deals. Cause that's what happens when NFL players do reach free agency. Like if you're good, someone's going to pay you because rarely do good players become available in the NFL. And them trading Ertz makes me feel like, okay, they're going to keep him. I think Howie wants that pick to like look good and say, hey, he was our top pick after the Super Bowl. We're really invested in him. We think we're getting him for a discount because he hasn't played a lot. He has so much room to grow because he hasn't had enough time to show it on the field, stuff like that. But it just feels like a weird situation with him. A lot of that's just on feel, not only concrete info. I'm not an insider. You're not an insider. Just something seems a little off with him and the organization. Maybe it was just that one comment. I'm reading too into it, but I can't imagine he's super. And there was talk too, right, that they were iffy there because they thought they might trade him for Deshaun,
right?
There just seems to be an iffy connection, and I'm not sure how sold they are on him long term. Swaggy's theory is that they are getting Gesicki, not based on anything concrete, but like he goes, they bring Gesicki in. I think Gesicki is, at least this season, is performing better for him. Obviously, you have some midnight green goggles on where I think Goddard has always been a big backer.
Yeah.
But I think Gesicki right now is playing better football than him.
Yeah. And I like him. I think he's more than serviceable. He's super duper physical. He's a guy who I think sometimes, for as skilled as he has shown to be, or as flash to be, he doesn't always show that. And I think that inconsistency might be where the disconnect is with him and the team. I think the team may be asking for that, and he's like, oh, I'm doing the best I can. Like he strikes me as I'm doing the best I can type guy. Like he's never going to be like, oh, well, you don't pay me to go across the middle. I think he's more of a, I'm just doing what you ask me type of dude. But I don't know if he'll ever be the, you know, the Darren Waller, Travis Kelce, George Kittle mold, and that's probably unfair to ask of him, but you know, those are his competition. He's a featured tight end in this league.
Yeah.
And those are guys he's always gonna be, you know, I guess you can throw Kyle Pitts in that mix too. Guy had 190 receiving that the other day, but you know, he's a guy who that's basically his peers, and that's who he's always going to be compared against. So I think that it would do him some good to take whatever this offseason brings. And I feel like he's a guy who he's a really good, like, best shape of his life candidate. Like, I don't think we've ever seen him in the best
shape.
You know, like, Dallas Goedert's the best shape of his life. You know, everybody's like best shape of his life. He strikes me as that kind of guy. He's easily a best shape of his life candidate.
I've been trying not to laugh about it, and it's pretty damning. Like, I think he's good, but he does, like, he's the tight end, and he's supposed to be like a top 10 tight end in the league. He doesn't have good hands. No. Your tight end that's supposed to be awesome, who's going to get like, it's probably like whether it's, he's going to get like 20, at least 20 million guaranteed in free agency from whatever team. Like, he doesn't have good hands. He like, he drops the ball. He's really good. Like, he's really talented. But like you think of Zach Ertz, like, would you have ever said like bad hands at any point in his career? We thought he was maybe like, not truly like goats here, like we thought he was in like 2014 or whatever. Like, the hands were, he was, like, the tight end needs to have good hands. Like, sometimes you could see with a receiver who does all these crafty things and crazy separation can burn him, and maybe he has some drop issues. Tight end, the whole point is like, you're not the fastest guy in the world, and but you sure can catch the ball.
That's
the point of the position.
It's like you're the fullback of the passing game. Like, you're not the fastest or the quickest, but like, you know, the fullback sure can run the ball. That's what he does. Like, the tight end's supposed to literally just catch the ball. Like, how can you have cement for hands as a tight end? Like, we never said Hurts has bad hands. All we ever asked for was some yak, right?
Does Darren Waller have bad hands?
Right.
Like, which tight end has like bad hands? Right. And again, like, I've always been a Goddard fan, and just one of those things hit me right now. I'm like, wow, we gas up this tight end, myself included, over the years, and even this year, and we talked about the podcast last week. Maybe take some Goddard bets, prop bets, because Ertz was gone, and I think he had like 60-ish yards, which isn't terrible. And one of my props, I had him 6 catches and 62 yards. Or 65 yards, 60 yards, whatever. I don't think he quite hit the receptions mark.
It was
a pretty good performance when his first Ertz came out there. But, like, we're gassing up a tight end who doesn't have great hands. Like, it just sums up the Eagles' experience. Everything feels disastrous.
Welcome to the 2021 Eagles season. We're talking about a tight end with clubs for hands.
We have, like, one of the 3 or 4 fastest quarterbacks in the league who – doesn't make crazy running plays. Like, besides Lamar and Kyler, it's like him and he.
They're the bizarro team for sure. Like, they have the sneaky deep threat who is never sneaky deep threat who never gets the ball in stride or who never gets in stride. The super fast quarterback who rarely runs the ball. The tight end, they're really a tight end who can't catch. Like, the list just goes on and on.
The really talented running back who doesn't know that you have to stay in bounds.
The running back who definitely got to stay in bounds. Like, they just leave the blooper reel sells itself.
Just play yakety sacks on the YouTube highlights for the season.
Because I think I saw, I forget what they were saying it during the game, but like the offensive line, I think, is like the most penalized offensive line in the league. Something crazy like that. And it makes the most sense. We're laughing and keeping crying, but it's definitely like
Walter White laughing.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
It sucks. Pro Football Talk. Let's do something that could be fun. Said that. Seems like last offseason, Russell Wilson wanted to trade. Pro Football Talk reported out today. It seemed like there was a lot of buzz last offseason.
Yeah.
It seems like a formality. Seahawks are doing poorly. He's out with an injury right now that he might be gone. Like, this is, he might have, you know, played his last game. We don't know the exact severity of the injury. It could also be a thing where he's like, this team's bad. They're not going to play us. I'm not coming back, which obviously you can't blame him. Before this, he's never missed a game in his career.
Yeah.
As a, you know, he was a day two pick, started from day one. And there was talk that he could be traded this season. And I'm like, obviously, we I don't want Deshaun Watson here. I don't think he wants to be here. So that's takes another thing out of the equation.
Yeah.
But if they were to trade for, say, they, what if they gave up their pick and the Colts pick and they kept the Miami pick, or they kept one of the Miami.
Or keep one of the Miami.
Or the Miami or the Eagles own pick.
Yeah.
And you send those two picks with Hurts and you kind of punt this year, but you throw Minshew in there. This is just a hypothetical.
Yes.
Would I bet on this happening? Absolutely not. But we're just shooting the breeze right now because there isn't a lot of talk about when your team's bad.
Right.
Throw Minshew out there for a level of stability. See what you have because he's on the contract for another year. He could be a good backup for Russ. Yes. Has probably can like a similar archetype in a way to Russell Wilson. Obviously, nowhere near the actual player and talent, but the way you cater offense to Russ, I think Minshew could actually run that offense, which is exactly what you want with the backup quarterback. Right. I think that's when I like the move when Hurts was the QB1 and still is the QB1. But you have Minshew in there that kind of makes sure the young guys on offense are still developing, and then let Russ sit, let Russ cook on the sideline.
Yeah.
And, you know, the organization has been obsessed with Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, like, the stories go back.
They drafted Carson Wentz because they were obsessed with Russ. Like all of those types of things. They drafted Jalen Hurts because they were upset about passing on Russell Wilson the first time, and they were nervous they were going to do it again. Like, all this stuff that it only feels fitting that he would come back. And, again, how he makes more trades than anyone, it's not going to happen at the deadline. But could you think of anything, like, more rocking? Because, you know, the Eagles are number one in this town. We have – kind of crazy basketball trades, Phillies trades, you know, the Cliff Lee signing amidst, you know, Phillies mania in this town back when I was in high school, that era. But I can't, like, T.O. coming here was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, like, for an in-season move, like, nothing could be more hectic or crazy. Again, like, we're not reporting this as a real thing or anything. Like, I don't want people to take stuff.
I can't remember. You know what? And to be honest, with the way that they are, they currently are, I think that they'd
be willing to do it. I think, like, I don't know if like they came up to the Eagles and were like, "We'll trade you him, give us X, Y, and Z." They would give X, Y, and Z because I think mentally they've punted on this year already. Maybe they were already punting to begin with before even fans either believed it, or maybe they didn't want to. I feel like maybe the team was bad. And I just couldn't believe it. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where I want to be optimistic. I don't want to throw the season away. I want to keep it entertained as long as I can throughout the season, have this suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
But they're probably much more realistic than me, which maybe kind of saves how we shot. We're like, oh, we were supposed to be bad.
Yeah. If they were like internally, if the conversation was, well, we knew what this year was going to be anyway, then how is that going anywhere, right? I mean, even if you're being super realistic, we know you're not going anywhere, like, after this year. I do think that everything's on the table, right? As bad teams always say at the end of the season, everything's on the table, right? So, and I think with that is the, you know, if you do have Jalen Hurts finish the season as your starter, and, you know, whatever you think an actual evaluation of him was or is, I think they absolutely will entertain it. I know.
Yeah.
I would be hard pressed to think that Seattle would let that game have been Russ's last game, even if it, you know,
it was weird. Just, that's because he doesn't have that outward personality.
Right.
I'm not saying he doesn't have an ego. Every NFL player, especially at his stature, his stardom, his quality, his talent, but he's not necessarily a media outwardly about it. Like, he probably has those qualities, but maybe he's smart enough to work the PR mills and not do that. But he seems like a guy, there's been so much smoke over the last few years that from insiders that something seems amiss with the organization. And maybe he gets traded this offseason. Maybe he goes to Washington. Maybe he goes to Carolina. Maybe he goes to some carousel where he ends up in Green Bay. There are these all these kind of options. He ends up with Las Vegas. And I mean, I could see like that's Howie's white whale.
Yeah.
And this is, we're talking not just trade deadline this year, but this offseason. I feel like they're not sold in Hurts. I'd rather, I don't know much about Matt Corral, if I'm pronouncing his name right, from Ole Miss. He seems like the guy everyone has as QB1. I haven't seen
him. Yeah, but he's like, anything.
He's nothing. Like, he doesn't seem like true super duper star. So there's not even like a quarterback where I'm super into, where I feel like we're almost resigned to, if they don't make a move for a veteran quarterback, situation where they just stack pieces and run with Hurts, or they do some kind of budget stopgap, whether it's Jimmy G. I wouldn't like it, but I wouldn't be shocked if like they said they get Matt Ryan next year or something like that, and be like, look at Tom Brady playing in his 40s. We think Matt Ryan, age 37, he's got some of the best years of his career in front of him. Something like that.
But and like you are also, if you go in and you draft the Matt Corral, that's a second year you're punting, because it's a very rookie quarterback. You think Jalen Hurts is a rookie?
You might have to punt on the yet, or you punt it. Is it a wasted year too? Because if Sirianni's coming back, he's probably getting fired after next season. Especially if the new quarterback, and you just kind of wasted a year of development.
Right, exactly.
Because earlier in a podcast earlier in the year, I was like, I could see Sirianni be done and one and caught some flack, and understand might have been too aggressive about it. But it's a situation where it feels like a marriage between those two, because just say they cleared out the GM, a new GM's going to want, and which I don't think is likely. The new GM's going to want a new quarterback, new quarterback.
And this isn't, there's guys on that team that are long in the teeth. Like this is more than, for all intents and purposes, this might be Jason Kelce's last year, you're going to have BG coming back and from a, Achilles injury. You're going to have Fletcher Cox a year older. You're going to have, Slay, Darius Slay a year older, Rodney McCombie a year older. Like that, those guys aren't built to punt years now. They're built to win now. So like you either have to make your move now, or you have to jettison the entire ship and tell those and be careful with those guys. Like, look, we love you, but we're burning it all down and we're rebuilding. So we're sending you to Miami, or we're sending you to Denver. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be, it can't be in between, because we've seen it. We've seen it in basketball, which is why we all were so on board with an actual tank, right? From our guys. You can't be middle of the pack, because middle of the pack gets you nowhere. Because all you do is wind up being a proverbial either 15, top 15 pick, a top 20 pick.
You're a 9-7 wild card team, because your defense abnormal year.
Right. You're not good enough for 7-9, but you're good enough for 9-7. But it's always one weekend and done. And so, like, it's got to be one or the other. And I don't know if they're having those conversations now, but it wouldn't surprise me if the new guy, if there is a new guy, comes in and says, boom, 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 we're out. Like this is a rebuild. It's going to be an interesting offseason, as always is around these sports, when it comes to sports.
I feel like Jeff Flory, because he has a lot of power in the organization. We've said that for a while, and maybe he always has, and we didn't really notice it because they were winning and it didn't matter as much. But when they're playing poorly, we get more worked up about it, because we have to put the blame on someone. And I say that as someone who does put blame on him. I'm not saying it's wrong that fans do this or media members do this. He doesn't strike me. He seems like a guy who wants to be on the forefront of analytics, the revolution of football, be a progressive football mind.
Yeah.
At the same time, he doesn't strike me as a guy. He's a little older now, not like Arthur Blank old or anything like that, but in the sense that he doesn't strike me as a guy who wants to rebuild. Like, I think when they made the move for Wentz, there was talent around that team. That wasn't really like a true rebuild. That was they just got a quarterback and they added it to a kind of good roster. And then we saw a year later that equated to a Super Bowl run. So I don't know. Like, it's going to be, like you said, it's an interesting offseason. It'll be weird, and it'll be a crazy inflection point where this year, next offseason. It sounds stupid to say like this offseason decides this. Like no crap. Obviously the offseason is important, but like in 5 years, we'll look at this upcoming offseason as the true inflection point of the season, not the 2021 offseason, but like this specific offseason where they're going to make a decision on quarterback that affects the next couple of years, either way, coaching either way, those type of things.
And I think you're right. I don't think that this current leadership is fond of tanking or built for a tank or built for a rebuild. So I think it's going to be it's either going to be a mess or it's going to be because I don't think that I agree wholeheartedly with your point that this is not a leadership group that is set to be in a part of anybody's rebuild or breakdown.
I just got a Twitter notification for Mark Stein, and it said Porzingis has officially been ruled out. And I just looked real quick on my phone when it popped out. I thought it said Porzingis has officially retired.
he might as well.
he should just retire. Yeah.
He might as well. I'm looking at the rest of the lineup.
Do you have any lines that we'll wrap up there? Any other lines that jump out to you? Anything on? I'm not looking at lines, but Thursday night should be the best game. Could be the game of the year, I think. Green Bay at Arizona.
Green Bay, Arizona. Yeah, that's the game I was looking at. I like Arizona a lot. Yeah,
because Davante Adams is out, right? He'll be out with the COVID. Yeah.
He's probably going to be out.
And Alan Lazard is unvaccinated. I think he'll be out. Okay, so that line makes a little bit more sense there. Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers had some memorable moments in that stadium in playoff games too. I'm thinking back now. Two playoff losses. Do you remember that? It was against Arizona. He had that like fourth end of regulation Hail Mary.
Yep.
He had a really famous game against Warner's Arizona team. It was like in the first round in 2008, where it was like another overtime game, but he ended up losing that one, I think.
Yeah.
Connors might have had a defensive touchdown on a fumble or interception. Not many games really striking my eye this weekend, I would say.
Yeah,
kind of a bad slate, man.
Yeah,
I'm itching for 4 o'clock on Sunday. Like, let me get on with the rest of my week. Like, you know, with the rest of my Sunday.
Yeah, this slate is not appealing. Not good on the eyes. There's gonna be a ton of good NBA games this week. If you are, for everyone listening, watch and bet the Charlotte Hornets. They're a really, really fun team. They are fast. They dunk on people. They shoot threes. They love playing with each other. They're everything that I want the Sixers to be. They are a really, really fun team. They're super fun to bet. Nice little parlay on a couple of their young guys. Another fun team, the Bulls, currently 4-0. They are, again, they're super fun. They play hard on defense. They got a ton of guys who will dunk on your face. Really, really, really fun team to watch. So those are my two to look out for if you're pacing your first couple of basketball parlays for the year. The Bulls and the Hornets are our early darlings. But yeah, man, it's going to be a really, really fun next couple of weeks.
How are the Raiders on bye on Halloween weekend? I know it's not Oakland in the black hole anymore, but that feels like a fan base that deserves to play at home.
Oh, because Vegas, I mean.
it's way different in Vegas, but still. Like, you think maybe the Bengals, black and orange, they have a good fan. I think, like I said this a bunch, like AFC North is the other fan base that I respect because they're like kind of similar weather, kind of got the same vibes as like the Philadelphia, New York, Boston, kind of DC area.
Especially Browns and Bengals fans. I feel like they're
rabid.
Yeah, I feel like they relate the most to Eagles fans because they're just as rabid. Like you said, like the weather is really sucky out there after like October too.
Miserable people.
Just miserable blue collar folks. Love them.
Bills are at home. They could have an exciting pregame, right?
Yeah.
Exciting tailgate scene. Get some, I don't know, postman, probably like some bar stools. some account posting a lot of videos.
I think they sent I think they have a direct line to Barcelona. They probably just, I think people just DM wrong stuff all the time.
I don't know if they have like a Buffalo correspondent, but like, not that we're affiliated with Barstool or anything, obviously, but I feel like that's the actual like Barstool content that people would like want to see.
That's how it happens.
It's like, just show me any videos of Buffalo Bills. And it's the way we talk about whoever does those videos. I don't think it's Barstool, whoever. Yeah. Does those videos outside of Madison Square Garden with those Knicks fans.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that should be the thing.
Whoever did those videos.
I want to see whoever does that. Yeah. I want to see whether it's, you know, just random people on Twitter who are taking those videos at Buffalo Bills. Tell you, it's like, show me that and make them blow up on TikTok, go viral some random account, Sports Illustrated, whatever account. Someone needs to go find those.
I don't care. Yeah, send it Rock everywhere. Sports. That's what we tune in for. That's the content we love.
Yeah. Well, getting late. Want to wrap this up? We good?
Yeah. Eagles stink. Yep.
Eagles stink. Keep leading green. You got here anything? No, it's nothing. All right. We'll be back next week. We have 7 episodes in the book.
Good for us, man. We're rocking. Good for us. I love it.
We're killing it, and the Eagles aren't. It makes too much sense. All right. Be back next week. I might have another From the Bleachers this week. It's not definitive, but I did release one on dropped on Monday. So if you haven't listened to that, tune in too. Peace.
Peace.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.